Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. Today, the IMF's latest regional economic outlook for sub-Saharan Africa shows a modest uptick in growth, largely driven by stronger global growth and higher commodity prices, but the IMF's Papa Ndiaye says there's no time to waste in implementing reforms.
These conditions are not expected to last very long, so there is an opportunity here to firm the recovery.
The study shows growth in sub-Saharan Africa picking up from 2.75% in 2017 to 3.5% in 2018. Papa Ndiaye heads the team of IMF economists who write the report. He says the uptick is good news for the region, which has been experiencing a slowdown in economic growth over the last few years. So in this report, there are many things, but one striking thing is that there are several countries that are still showing that they have fairly strong growth. What's behind that? What's driving the strong growth in that group of countries?
Mm-hmm. Well, in those countries that are growing around above 6%, growth is basically driven by public infrastructure. And the governments there have engaged into large infrastructure projects that have helped support growth. And these are countries like Ivory Coast, Ethiopia, Ghana, Senegal, Rwanda.
So they're reaping the benefits of investment in infrastructure.
That's right. They are investing in infrastructure, and we see the benefits in terms of growth. Now, going forward, the challenge in these countries is mainly to hand over the reins of growth to the private sector, because the counterpart or the implication of this spending on infrastructure has been an increase in public debt. And as vulnerabilities or debt vulnerabilities increase, there is a need to boost the private sector and allow it to take over the reins of growth.
Yeah, so there's two things on that. And one is when you mention debt, there are more vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. The report shows that the several countries are having increasing debt problems. Mm-hmm. Why are so many countries struggling with debt? And are we on the verge of a debt crisis in Africa?
Well, the direct answer to that is no. Debt vulnerabilities are rising. There is a handful of countries that are in debt distress and have been assessed as being at high risk of debt distress.
How many of those countries?
You have 6 countries that are in debt distress right now, mm-hmm. and 9 countries that are assessed to be at high risk of debt distress. Now, being at high risk of debt distress doesn't mean that you will be in there. The important thing is for many of the countries in this region to implement the consolidation plans that they have already committed to. And basically, our forecast shows that if those consolidation plans move ahead, the debt vulnerabilities will decline, and that is going to stabilize or even go down in some cases. So that's what the focus should be. I mean, coming back to your question about what caused that, I mean, there are several reasons for it. The first one was the public infrastructure that we talked about earlier, and in those countries there was space to ramp up this infrastructure by the governments. But there is also the fact that many of these countries have been hit by a large commodity shock. I mean, there was a large decline in oil prices in 2014. And if you go back and look at it historically, this is one of the largest in real terms since 1970. And typically, countries don't get out of that without increasing debt. It's a large shock that they had to adjust to. Some have delayed the adjustment, and you've seen it. The consequences in terms of that, but they are making headways toward it. They still have more progress to make, but you know, if those plans are implemented, that should stabilize the debt. And you have a handful of countries also that haven't been in conflict and have long-standing issues that they had to deal with, and very difficult economic situation with a lot of people that were displaced internally.
So I'm going to get to that in a second, but I'd like to ask you about the private investment thing you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. So countries that have been invested in their infrastructure
are seeing more mm-hmm. private investment, mm-hmm. And ideally we'd like to see private companies jumping in mm-hmm. Rather than public investment. Mm-hmm. How do you go about encouraging more private investment when you know the business environment is quite difficult in some countries?
I mean, here the focus, we had two analytical chapters in this regional economic outlook. One is on the need to raise the domestic revenues and just to allow countries to be able to pay for all these development needs that they have. And infrastructure, invest in human and physical capital to
But when you say domestic revenues, what do you mean?
It's tax revenue, because tax revenue are very low across sub-Saharan Africa. This does not necessarily mean increasing tax rates themselves. It's more, there is a room for increasing the efficiency in the VAT frameworks and streamlining the exemptions and things like that that would... could give more revenues to governments without really hurting growth. The second focus of analytical focus of this regional economy is on private investment, because this is critical for the region to be able to achieve sustainable and strong growth over the medium term. The levels of private investment in sub-Saharan Africa are low compared with what we see in comparable countries in other region. And we did some analytical work there to try to uncover the determinants of private investment and what it would take for it to take off. And the findings are many, and I would invite all our listeners to read the report. But in a nutshell, what we find is that one needs to strengthen the economic prospects first for this, to provide these opportunities for investment in the countries. And then strengthen the business and regulatory environment in many of the countries.
But how would they do that? I mean, there's so many. Some of these countries have a pretty high degree of instability, and you mentioned earlier conflict.
Yeah.
If there's one thing that they can do to sort of stabilize the business environment, what would it be?
So there's a lot in terms of improving governance and streamlining the various business processes and so on that they could do. But it's not only that. I mean, there is also the need to provide greater access to credit to people. And we found that this is a major constraint for investment, private investment in the region. So by deepening financial markets, and that could provide some help. And countries, because all of these reforms in general take time, other countries have pursued different avenues to boost private investment. Some have engaged into public-private partnerships to get to jumpstart this private investment, if you will. Others have tried to attract more FDI, foreign direct investment, into their countries, and there are also global initiatives that have been in place for a few years. I mean, there the Belt and Road Initiative, that's the Chinese leadership, and the Compact with Africa, the G20 initiative, Compact with Africa, which aims to spur directly private investment in the region. And now these are initiatives that still have to bear fruit. They are just at the beginning, but we are confident that they could help and they would be beneficial.
And so you mentioned conflict, which is, unfortunately, there is a lot of conflict in sub-Saharan Africa, and especially in the Sahel region. To what extent is that disrupting economies? And what does the report say in terms of trying to deal with that issue?
Yeah, there are many countries that are dealing with very difficult situations. Some of them are dealing with increased terrorist activities, and these are the Sahel countries you are referring to. And those situations have implied or caused a lot of displacement. Beyond the human toll, there's also a financial toll to it, which puts a lot of strain on budget positions that are not very strong. So it's a difficult situation. Other countries have also been dealing with internal conflicts. And what we've seen in the past few years is a dramatic increase in the number of internally displaced people, over 7 million or so. And that has creates complications for neighboring countries as well. And it is a very difficult situation.
Does a report look at what will happen once these countries come out of conflict? There tends to be boosts in growth, or at least there's evidence that shows that some countries that have exited conflict have very strong growth for the years following that. Does the report look at that at all?
Yes, I mean, we looked at it in the context of the analytical chapter on private investment. We went through the experience of various countries in the region. And what you really see is a typical pattern by which countries that manage to resolve their internal conflicts see a boost in private investment in the following few years. The challenge after that is just to transform that into sustained growth, which typically takes on additional reforms that I alluded to earlier in terms of governance and reforms of product and labor market and so on.
And so this report, you write this report every 6 months?
Yes.
What do you think next, in 6 months from now, will we be having a conversation about sub-Saharan Africa that where growth is strong?
Well, we really hope so. We have a modest uptick in growth right now that's predicated on a strong global outlook, some recovery in commodity prices and very easy financial conditions. These conditions are not expected to last very long. So there is an opportunity here to firm the recovery by implementing the reforms that are needed to set themselves on a sustainable high growth. We are going to look at the issue of the future of work in sub-Saharan Africa in 6 months, hoping that the growth conditions will still be there. The focus will be on the challenges and opportunities that these rapid advances in technology that we see in the world are going to pose for the region. And so in the next report, I invite all the listeners to not only read the current report, but also wait for a very exciting report in 6 months. You know.
Great. We're looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Papa Njai, head of the Regional Studies Division in the IMF's African Department, talking about the latest regional economic outlook for sub-Saharan Africa. You can read the full report at imf.org. And if you like this podcast, subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts. And you can also now follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast.